Good afternoon, everyone. If I can get your attention, bonjour. I'd like to know if I have people's attention. Thank you. So, I will introduce myself. I am a revamped version of Dave Austin. My name is Nathalie Ndongo. Je m'appelle Nathalie Ndongo. J'ai participé dans ce projet. I was a researcher in this project. I conducted one part of qualitative research, which involved interviews of individuals as well as interviews with focus groups. Alors, on est rendu à cette partie-là aujourd'hui où on va en avoir un peu de discussion et de présentation de notre recherche qualitative. The way it will work, we'll have four presentations about each different dossier, followed up with a question session for you to ask questions to the panelists, and then we'll have closing remarks at around 3 o'clock. C'est d'accord? C'est correct pour tout le monde? Oui? Merci. Ah, il faut que je demande, il y a une clé USB qui était laissée ici? D'accord, on a trouvé la personne. So I'd like to start first off with Dr. Miriam Denov. She is a professor here at McGill University in social work, and elle était responsable du dossier sur les jeunes et le système juridique.
Thanking participants who agreed to partake in this study. In particular, the qualitative piece. Can you hear me at the back now? Because without their sharing their stories and providing us with their time, we wouldn't be able to present what we have today. I also just want to thank my fellow team members and colleagues here for they're a privilege to really work with them, and under the leadership of Jim Torchiner. It's been a really a great team and a really exciting project. So I'm going to be highlighting the central themes. We have several presentations this afternoon. I want to make sure also that we have enough time for all the presenters and specifically our youth presenters and researchers today. So I'm going to go through this fairly quickly. And I'm going to be starting off by giving you a little bit of just basic context in terms of realities about race and crime in Canada, and particularly around statistics. And for anybody who's tried to do some research on the issue of race and crime in Canada, likely has run up with several challenges. And this is because statistics on race and crime in Canada are not normally released. And it's something that researchers have tended to term the northern taboo. What we do know, however, in terms of statistics that have been around for a long time and have been repeated over a long period of time, is the overrepresentation in terms of our criminal justice system of both Aboriginal offenders and black offenders at all levels of the Canadian criminal justice system. Just to give you a bit of context in terms of Aboriginal offenders, representing Aboriginal peoples represent 3% of the Canadian population and yet account for nearly 15% of the federal inmate population. With regard to blacks, the black community representing approximately 2% of the Canadian population and yet accounting for more than 6% of the federal inmate population in Canada. So the issue of overrepresentation doesn't only affect adults. It affects young people in the criminal justice system as well. And so the disparities and the overrepresentation occur at the youth justice level as well. I should mention that in 1996, a sentencing provision came into place within the Canadian Criminal Code that some of you may be aware of in terms of Section 718.2e. Whereby basically judges are required to pay specific attention or particular attention to the background of Aboriginal offenders in particular, and that all available sanctions outside of incarceration should be considered by judges. And this provision in the Criminal Code was precisely to remedy or eradicate this idea of overrepresentation. However, this again is specifically in relation to Aboriginal offenders, and it's not clear whether this type of provision is used at all in terms of other racialized communities. So within this backdrop is in terms of the larger demographic data that we heard about in the morning, is that we wanted to get a sense of community members' views on issues related to race, crime, and in particular its relationship with youth. So a small sample of individuals, qualitative in-depth interviews were conducted with 15 people, community workers, youth, young mothers, a group of prisoners, and two focus groups alongside this were conducted to garner specifically perspectives on relationships with the police, court system and legal representation, the issue of corrections and especially prisoners' experiences, and issues raised that were in regards to youth perspectives. So although, of course, we're talking about 15 in-depth interviews, we're talking about two focus groups, these can no way be generalized to the broader communities. But what I think they do is offer important insights that can lay the foundations for future policy and future research. So as much as possible, in order to kind of highlight what was said in the morning, but also provide actually the voices of community members, as much as possible, I'm going to try to highlight actual quotations from the individuals that we interviewed. So in relationship, or in relation to the police then, and community perspectives in relation to the police, participants talked about the relationships were largely characterized by animosity, by hostility, by intimidation and distrust. And this was particularly salient among the young people that were interviewed. Participants also talked about that there's a cordial relationship in terms of black leadership and the police, and yet it's a superficial relationship. What was also mentioned was this reality of sort of discourse versus what happens in practice on the ground, and that that in terms of the police, that a desire to nurture a better relationship with the black community is said publicly. However, in practice and what happens in terms of policies is that continually young people are unjustly penalized. And I think what was perhaps most salient was the way people talked about the fact that there was an absence of a relationship with the police, that participants talked about being forced into very much hierarchical interactions with the police and neither side fully understanding or understanding the other. Another issue that was brought up by participants was this idea of the black community being policed differently than other communities, whereby the black communities have been garnered greater police attention, greater surveillance on the whole. And giving different examples of how police practices in relation to certain events around Montreal, for example, that something like the Jazz Festival in comparison to something like Carnival, was policed very, very differently. And that participants talked about how community festivals in Côte des Neiges, for example, drew the presence and surveillance of hundreds of officers. Also, what was talked about were issues of misperceptions and stereotypes in relation specifically with treatment of black youth, that police officers erroneously saw gang symbols in young people's clothing, for example, that somebody wearing red or blue was automatically associated with a particular gang, and that that this caused an enormous amount of difficulty, and that basically law-abiding black youth are often collateral damage of these practices. And as this community worker said, if a person is wearing certain colors, they're identified as being in a gang. That's not the way to go about things. Right there, you're putting a mark upon people. Once you start by harassing them, you're just going to get more frustrated and pull away from the police. One thing that was mentioned as something that was positive were some of the community policing initiatives, that this was acknowledged by some of the participants as a genuine effort to actually reach out to the black community, and that these police officers were more accessible in schools and in community organizations, and as well as on the street. However, it was said that this really didn't apply in the same way to patrol officers. The issue of racial profiling, which was talked about in the morning, I'm not going to go into much detail about this because I know that Faux is going to be talking about this in greater detail. But I did just want to mention that it was something that came up consistently in the interviews, and that it was mentioned by participants as being extremely frustrating, highly anxiety-provoking. And that also issue of racial profiling are now being seen in schools as well as in other areas. In terms of the court system, as this community worker said, even me being at this level where I feel like I'm comfortable with myself and I know where I want to go and I'm on the right path, my path, but sometimes I still feel like the legal system is against me. And this seemed to be sort of a prevalent theme among those that we interviewed. In particular, issues of legal representation and sentencing were regarded as a main issue. And in particular, the issue of legal aid representation, that in terms of black youth, that most likely, in many cases, that black youth were provided with legal aid representation, that often young people might meet their lawyers 10 minutes prior to being involved in a court case, that these are lawyers that take on an enormous amount of cases. They have perhaps very little knowledge about the lives of these young people in some cases, and the incentive is to perform quickly rather than adeptly, and that the interviews really highlighted that better representation is necessary, and that another issue that came up in relation to that is black youth tending to receive harsher sentences and more convictions than other groups. Another issue in terms of the court system was lack of access to legal information, so that there was generally a poor communication between the legal system and the black community, and it was also mentioned that immigrant families have a difficult time navigating such an unfamiliar system. And also the reality that providing information to young people, that there are other options besides pleading guilty, that often to expedite cases, young people are encouraged to plead guilty in cases, and that there are other options. In terms of the correctional system, this is one piece that I'm I think was really important contribution to the study as a whole, because I think that the voices of prisoners are largely marginalized and, in fact, rarely consulted in terms of studies. And I think we have to thank David Austin for helping us gain access to the prisoners and for conducting these interviews. And this is, again, one area that very powerful in terms of their words and their experiences. If you are in prison, you really feel black. You know really that you are a black person. In terms of the prisoners, then, they spoke about issues of racial tension, division, and fear within the walls of the prison, that particularly in relation to black prisoners and other prisoners, as well as the prison authorities. And that, for example, they gave examples of it being very difficult for a black prisoner to join a white sports team, that there were clear racial divisions within the prisons. There were also linguistic divisions, and this prisoner talked about, I was English, and they were so against the English. They were like, hey, français ici, moi je comprends pas, it was bad, but I learned French. But they were ignorant for language, and race was just a double straight for you. If something was to go off, they looked at the black guy a little different. The other issue that the prisoners talked about was the issue of fear, that drawing on stereotypes, drawing on misconceptions, that participants reported that there was an institutional fear of black prisoners, that this idea of large numbers of blacks in prison would lead somehow to instability and violence and unrest in the prison. Let's say there are 5 black people out of 120. To them, that's enough. It's like they're a lot, 5. There was never 5 before. That's what they started saying. There's so many, it's bad. Anybody that was in that prison during that year, all you could hear was, the blacks are going to take over, the blacks are going to take over. I was like, what the hell's wrong with you people? One interesting aspect that prisoners talked about was issues of solidarity. That the respondents talked about having that the black prisoners provided support and companionship to others inside because they were a minority, and that given what I talked about earlier about this fear, that oftentimes this solidarity was actually looked at as a potential threat. So the solidarity among the prisoners was actually, again, feared by the officials in the prison and the prison guards. There was also a sense of solidarity in terms of the older prisoners wanting to ensure that the younger prisoners were, in a way, taken care of, or a feeling of responsibility to support the younger prisoners. And that some of the individuals that were interviewed had been serving long sentences and had spent most of their formative years in prison. And they talked about how it was really important that they provide a mentorship model to the younger prisoners and encourage or discourage them from engaging in violence. I know I'm running out of time, so I'm going to be going through this rest of it fairly quickly. Other issues that prisoners talked about were mental health and psychological counseling on the inside, that this was seen as extremely helpful and not always accessible, but it was very important in terms of their daily life on the inside. Meaning, religion, and spirituality became extremely important to many of the prisoners that we talked to. And that some also had converted to Islam, for example, while they were in prison. In terms of rehabilitation and educational programs, again, this was seen as one of the high, you know, sort of positive things that happened to them inside was, for example, this individual said, I finished high school, got my diploma. That was practically, I think that was the best highlights of my life inside the walls. And in terms of outside support, family, friends, community, again, that was seen as critical to sort of surviving life on the inside, knowing that there were people who supported you, and that also provided that transition between being in prison and then leaving prison. This individual said, I always wondered how somebody could come to such a place alone. If I went through this whole thing alone, I don't know what it would have happened. I'm so happy that people always came to make sure I was there, you know, to the court. They came. I had everybody together, people who never met each other, to go and see my mom. Anything you need? Because they remembered me for me, and they didn't judge me for the incident. In terms of the youth perspectives, I think the quotations can speak for themselves in terms of the different ideas about what young people had in terms of what it means to be black. And I think you can read those, and they, as I said, they speak for themselves. The youth did talk about. In the focus groups, the issues of social isolation and marginalization, and talked about social isolation and a lack of supportive relationships as the two main central challenges facing black youth. They also, one of the predominant themes was that the larger dominant society assigns black people an identity that is associated with crime and delinquency, and a group of people that aren't to be trusted. issues of exclusion and nonconformity, that for some black youth, this sort of marginalized outsider status became an important part of how they began to actually see themselves. And some of the youth talked about deliberately deriving their identity and self-worth in opposition to sort of mainstream norms that systematically excluded them. In terms of education, the youth participants stressed the importance of education, but at the same time, they highlighted that or feelings of being failed by the education system. As this young person said, that's how you drop out of school, because you can't rely on the school system. We can't rely on them to teach us our own history, so we figure that they're not teaching us anything. The issue of the media came up a lot in terms of focus groups with young people, and that the negative, stereotypical portrayals of black youth in the media. As this young person said, we were never portrayed as anything good, just the glam, not the serious part. But we have teachers out there. We have social workers out there. You know, we actually have more people in the system doing more than just music, the sports, the drugs. More people, not just on welfare, you know. And finally, main issue in terms of newcomer issues, that participants, both adults and youth, talked about the unique challenges facing immigrant and refugee youth, including issues of post-traumatic stress, navigating an unfamiliar justice system, threats of deportation, the disillusionment with the education system, and the need to integrate families' culture of origin with the culture of the host community. Now, I don't think I have time to talk about them, but there were discussions of ways to move forward, which are actually in the report. So I'm going to leave you to refer to the report to look at some of the solutions that were offered or recommendations from community members and the youth themselves. And I'm going to pass it on to Nicole. Thanks.
Thank you.